Shabbat Shalom again.
Shabbat Shalom.
And Shabbat Shalom to our brethren who will be watching this with us today from the diaspora. Our last week here, and I have a very important message. It's called the Shemitah in the Garden of Eden. The Shemitah in the Garden of Eden. And we are now almost 3 months into the Shemitah, amazingly. And I am learning much about the Shemitah. I'm loving it every day that's going on. Our group here got a lot of blessings from the Shemitah in the last few months. And I want to contrast this, the Shemitah with the Garden of Eden. I want to start in Genesis 2, in verse 7 through 9. Genesis, the second chapter, verse 7 through 9. It says, "And Yahweh Elohim formed the man, Ha'adom, from the dust of the ground and blew into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living soul. And Yahweh Elohim planted a garden in Eden to the east, and he put the man whom he had formed there. And out of the ground Yahweh Elohim made to spring up every tree that is pleasant to the sight and is good for food. The tree of life was also in the middle of the garden, also the tree of the knowledge of good and evil." And then we drop down to verse 15. "And Yahweh Elohim took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it. And Yahweh Elohim commanded the man, saying, 'Eating you may eat of every tree in the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you may not eat, for in the day you eat of it, surely you shall die.'" So the day you eat of it or consume it, you will die. So it's very interesting that throughout the ages, and even in modern times, people have thought the fruit was an apple, right? You always see the serpent there with an apple in his hand, but it's never mentioned anything about the fruit of any of the trees. You know, it just simply says that all these different fruit trees are there, and this tree of the knowledge of good and evil you're not to eat. And I believe the reason why the fruit is not mentioned is because the fruit is really immaterial. The point that Yahweh's trying to make, he's not trying to make that one fruit is better than another fruit, or there's a fruit that's evil, which if it was, he would mention it. But what he's trying to talk about more than food is obedience and faith. That's what it all comes down to. It comes down to obedience and faith, and he uses the simplest analogy of a piece of fruit. You know, he's not using killing or murdering or lying or adultery, because we know that these are moral things and how evil they are. He uses the basis of a piece of fruit to make a point about unconditional surrender and obedience to him. And yeah, on one end, it's a simple piece of fruit. But on the other end, look at what happened. We've had 6,000 years of misery because of that. So really, it's nothing about food or fruit. Like I said, it has to do with obedience and 100% faith in trusting Yahweh. Now we go to Leviticus 25 with the Shemitah. "And Yahweh spoke to Moses at Mount Sinai, saying, 'Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I am giving to you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to Yahweh. You shall sow your field 6 years, and you shall prune your vineyard 6 years, and you shall gather its produce. And in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath the rest of the land, a Sabbath to Yahweh. You shall not sow your field, and you shall not prune your vineyard. You shall not reap that which grows of itself of the harvest, and you shall not gather the grapes of your unkept vine. It shall be a year of rest to the land. And the Sabbath of the land shall be to you for food, for consumption. And to your male slave and your female slave, and to the hired one, and to your tenant, and to those living among you." So again, just like the Garden of Eden, the Shemitah, what I'm really coming to the conclusion of, it really has nothing to do with food. Or let's say very little, you know. But the same as the Garden of Eden, it had something to do with food, because there was a food you could eat and a food you couldn't eat. But that was not really the premise of what Yahweh was trying to say. The same as the Shemitah. It really is very little about food, but it has everything to do with faith and obedience to Yahweh. Surrender 100%. Really, to be honest, it actually is a blessing. The same way the Torah, right? The Torah was not meant for salvation. But what is the Torah? It's a mirror to my life. It's a mirror to my life to tell me where I'm going right and where I'm going wrong. So without the Torah, how do I know? How on earth would I know without the Torah what kind of clothes to wear? You know, what kind of food would I eat? How do I treat my neighbor? How do I act in a marriage relationship? I wouldn't know any of these things without the Torah. I would just have to guess or decide for myself. So it's the same way here. The Shemitah is like a mirror to our life and a blessing to show us how close we are to Yahweh or how far away we are from Yahweh. So again, it's not about food, but obedience and faith. Yahweh says it. And the other thing is, what's very interesting is, it's called a Sabbath. It's called a Sabbath. A year of a Sabbath. So now it's not just connected to the Garden of Eden, it's also connected to the Sabbath. What does he mean, a year of a Sabbath? Well, what is the Sabbath all about? Let's go to Exodus 20. Because anything that's connected to the Sabbath has got to be pretty good. Because you don't get much better blessings in life than the Sabbath day. Over the years, being a Sabbath keeper now for more than 30 years, it's just the greatest day of the week. Because it's a day where you get to do, to eat, and to have fellowship, and all the great things, even more than you do during the week, and yet you don't have to work for it. You don't have to work for it. You do have to prepare, right? There is a preparation day, so there is preparation. But on Sabbath, it's not a punishment that we're not allowed to work, as if we don't work hard enough during the week. No, it's a blessing that we don't have to work, we don't have to cook, we don't have to mow the lawn. It's a blessing that we get 24 hours every seventh day only to commune with Yahweh. Only to talk with each other, to share stories of faith, to sing praises to Him. That one of every 7 days, what a blessing that we get. And it really is. So now that the Shemitah is connected to this, let's try to see how. Exodus 20 and verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Just like 6 years you shall labor and do all your work. And the seventh day is a Sabbath to Yahweh your Elohim. The seventh year is a Sabbath to Yahweh your Elohim. Just like the seventh millennium is a Sabbath to Yahweh your Elohim. We had 6,000 years of Satan's system that we're working in, but now we have the 7,000th year, the millennium's coming, where we'll get to rest. We'll get to rest in Yahweh. And you shall not do any work, you and your son, and your daughter, your male slave, your female slave, and your livestock, and the stranger who is in your gates. For in 6 days, why is he saying this? For in 6 days Yahweh made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. On account of this, Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and sanctified it. So now this is kind of interesting. The Shemitah is connected to the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden is connected to the Sabbath, and the Sabbath is connected to the Shemitah. You know, it's all connected together. It's all the same. So this is, how do you learn about the Shemitah? Learn about the Garden of Eden and learn about the Sabbath, and then you'll understand about the Shemitah. Right? It's a Sabbath of rest. So here it is. If we are blessed every seventh day that we don't have to toil and work, you know, because when we go back to Genesis, we're going to see that one of the curses of Adam, because he didn't follow Yahweh's command, was that he was going to have to toil to get his food in thorns and thickets. It wasn't going to be easy. It wasn't going to be like Eden where you're just going picking off the trees. We were going to have to work for it. And it was going to be a struggle to bear fruit. The same way we see today. Bearing fruit for Yahweh is a struggle. You just don't go out and tell everybody and they believe, right? You got to work on it. You got to prepare yourself. You have to study the scriptures. You got to pray to the Holy Spirit. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of functionality. It takes a plan of action. You know? So every seventh year would be like this. Every seventh year. This is why almost most people in the sabbatical year, they didn't work the whole year. This is why Yeshua came in a sabbatical year. 27-28, the year Yeshua started his ministry, was a sabbatical year. Why? Because since most people were not working, where were they? They were coming here to the mount, you know, and hearing the Sermon on the Mount. They were coming while he was out on the boat and listening to the sermons. They were all over. They were making themselves available because the seventh day was a spiritual day toward Yahweh and the seventh year was a spiritual year toward Yahweh. And the ones that didn't do that, the ones that were so worried about working and keeping their fields and not following the Shemitah, were the ones that missed out on the Messiah. They were the ones that, you know, when the wife came in and said, "Wow, you know, Moses, guess what? There's this young whippersnapper from Capernaum that's over here, and he's teaching us all these things." "Oh, yeah, I heard about it. No, got to get out to my field. Only got another week. The rains are going to be coming." And they missed out. They literally missed out on salvation. They missed out on being a first fruit because they missed the Shemitah. But the ones who had eyes to see and ears to hear, that were waiting for that Shemitah, they didn't know Yeshua was coming, right? All they knew is, this is the seventh year. We're being blessed. You know what? We don't have to go out and work the field. We don't have to work the land. This is the year Yahweh will provide. They remembered the manna in the wilderness. They remembered in faith how Yahweh provided every single day. They didn't go to sleep wondering, "Oh, I pray, Yahweh, tomorrow that manna will be there." No, in faith, they woke up every day just looking for where it was. In the same way, in 27 AD, that's what they did. Nope, this is the year to Yahweh. We're setting it apart. Because what does it say about the Sabbath? 6 days he created the heavens and the earth, the sea as well, that he rested on the seventh day. On account of this, Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and sanctified it. He made it holy. He set it apart. It's apart from everything else. It's not just apart from work. It's sanctified to Yahweh. It's something that is set apart to Yahweh. And that's why this day, it's not only about not working. We wouldn't go out here to play volleyball, or we wouldn't go out here exercising, or we wouldn't do anything that would be seeking our own pleasure. That's what it says in Isaiah 58. It's a day to totally focus on Yahweh. And now, 1 in 7, he gives us a year, a whole year to totally focus on him, right? And he says, "Don't worry, I'll provide for you." That's what it's about, because all of us have to grow in faith. We have to grow, and how do you grow in faith? By repetition, over and over and over. You're not going to grow in faith the very first time that you try it. You have to keep believing over and over and over, and then you'll be convicted. But what a blessing the Shemitah is. What a blessing that Yahweh not gives us now just a day in 7. He gives us a year in 7. He gives us a year to totally dedicate to him. The Sabbath is about creation. The Garden of Eden is about creation. Sanctification. So is the Shemitah. It's a blessing to set apart for a full year. Food during the Shemitah is simply the byproduct Yahweh chose to remind us to be sanctified. Like I said, the Shemitah really is very little about food. The only reason he gives us that mandate on food is so every day we're thinking, is this food kosher? The same way as you go out, right? You wouldn't eat pork. You wouldn't eat shellfish because it's not kosher. So when you eat, you have to think about it. Well, now, every time we eat in the Shemitah, we have to think about it. Because food that was planted during the Shemitah or harvested during the Shemitah, it's outside judicial order. It's not kosher. Doesn't matter that it's an apple. Doesn't matter that it's a cucumber. It's not kosher. Because it's violating the word of Yahweh. The same way pork violates the word of Yahweh. So it makes us think more. The same way during unleavened bread. There's nothing wrong with leaven. Except if it's during the 7 days of unleavened bread. Because that's the day Yahweh said to stay away from it. So the same way now. You know, next year, we can eat cucumbers and we can eat carrots that are planted outside the Shemitah. But during the Shemitah, he wants us to think about it. But you know what? If you're working a worldly job, if you're out here doing all your things, yeah, then it's going to be hard. You're not going to be thinking about the Shemitah. The Hebrew word for sanctified, Kadosh, literally translated holy, is to be separated or sanctified to Yahweh. So it's not simply just something sanctified. That's why I like the word holy. Because when I think of the word holy, there's only one thing in my mind I think of, set apart to Yahweh. That's it. You know, where in Hebrew, sanctified can mean anything. Like we said, a prostitute is sanctified. It's the same word that they use in the Bible. But when you say holy, it's something that's only set apart to Yahweh. And the Shemitah is something that's set apart to Yahweh. So important was the Shemitah that we know the Israelites didn't keep it. And what did Yahweh say? You're going to get kicked out of this land now. You're going into diaspora. And you know what? You know how long you'll be in diaspora? 70 years because of the 70 Shemitahs you didn't keep. For every Shemitah you missed, you're going to be out there in Babylon. But he says, at the end of 70 years, I will take you from the nations. I will gather you from your diaspora, and I will bring you back to your land. Is this a year? 2,000 years. They haven't kept the Shemitah correctly, right? This is the first time since the days of Yeshua we're understanding it, what it really means. Is this an important Shemitah? You better believe it is. I believe the most important Shemitah since the Garden of Eden. Because Yahweh's getting ready to gather his people again. But you're not coming right back to the promised land. There's going to be a few detours. Read Numbers 33. There was 42 stops in the wilderness. And we know that just like in the Jubilee, it's 7 times 7, then the Jubilee. Yahweh works in numbers. 7 is the number of perfection or completion. There's 7 more stops in the wilderness. But this Shemitah is the beginning of that. And the same way, the people who in 27 AD who worked and didn't focus on what this means, not about vegetables and fruits, but about sanctification to Yahweh, they missed out on Messiah, the same way this year. That people that are not keeping the Shemitah, that are bitter with it, whatever it is, or keeping it incorrectly, they are going to miss out. Because we are at a turning point. We're at a turning point, as I'm going to show you by the end of this message. We're at a turning point here. And Yahweh is getting ready to move his people to the next step. We're not ready for the promised land yet. But the Shemitah is the first step of the wilderness. We're not even ready for the wilderness. That's why we need the Shemitah. But it's the first step. Leviticus 11. Show you something else that's about food, but really not about food. Because you want to know something? The kingdom of Yahweh is not meat and drink. It's not food and drink. And it really isn't. It really isn't. Whether you eat pork or don't eat pork, it doesn't make you any more moral. It doesn't make you a better person or not. What it makes you is more sanctified, right? It's a matter of obedience. Because Yahweh could have said, don't eat beef. And then we wouldn't be eating beef. He could have said, don't eat chicken, and we wouldn't be eating chicken. It doesn't matter what the avenue is that he's using. What matters is our obedience to unconditionally follow whatever he says. That's what matters. And this year, it's whatever is planted or harvested, whoever did that is violating the commandment. They're doing no different than somebody killing somebody else. It's a violation of Torah. So if somebody is violating Torah, why on earth would I want to eat that food? Why would I want to take that food and give it to somebody else? Why would I want to have anything to do with food that's unkosher? It's unkosher. So if something is unkosher, that means I need to be sanctified away from it. I'm not going to cook it for somebody else. I'm sorry. If you have an unconverted spouse and they want you to cook pork, I'm sorry. Have them cook it themselves. You know, nothing you can do if they want to eat it, but you certainly don't have to cook it. Because the minute you go near that food, you're taking away your sanctification. It's the same way I say with Shabbat. There's times where there's people that are either living with unconverted people or whatever, where there's nothing you can do about it. But one thing is certain. Every single time during the Sabbath, when anybody that's not a covenant believer comes near you, you take your sanctification away. Doesn't matter who they are, their intentions can be good, it can be your landlord, it could be anything. But the minute a non-covenant person comes in your midst during Shabbat, you're taking away your sanctification. And what did he say about the Sabbath? It's a day to sanctify yourself. It's a day to enter Yahweh's rest. What is that rest? That's the rest from the sin that we're going to see in the Garden of Eden. So we get to do that every seventh day. We get to do that every seventh year. And we get to do it for 1,000 years, very shortly, if we prove to Yahweh that this really means something to us, that we're serious about it, that no matter what, unconditionally, we will follow him, no matter what happens. So Leviticus 11, let's go back here now, which is the whole chapter on clean and unclean. And like I said, we're going to see, again, this has very little to do with food. Yahweh happened to pick these foods were clean and unclean. It really doesn't matter which ones he picked. What matters is whatever he says, I'm going to follow. And Yahweh spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying to them, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, these are the living things which you shall eat out of all the animals which are on the earth. So now he's telling, these are the things you eat. Fine. Whatever you tell. Tell me to eat dirt. Tell me to leave. It doesn't matter. Whatever you say, I'm going to do it. Just tell me. That's all I need to know. I don't need to figure it out scientifically. I don't need to know why. I don't need to know all these things. All I need to know is that Yahweh said it. I believe it. That settles it. That's it. So now we drop down to verse 10, right? But anyone that does not have fins and scales in the sea, talking about fish now, and in the brooks, and any swarming creature of the waters, and any creature which lives in the waters, they are to be detested by you. Right? What's so bad about them? You know, it's like I said, it's not a moral issue. Why are they detested? Because Yahweh set them apart. Because Yahweh detests it. It's not meant to be edible for us. Yes, they are an abomination to you. You shall not eat their flesh, and you shall shun their dead bodies. If anyone that does not have fins and scales in the waters, it shall be an unclean thing to you. Period. That's all Yahweh has to say, okay? Detestable, unclean, you got my mind. I ain't going near it. Now we drop down to verse 29. He goes into all the ones that are clean, that are unclean. He says, and these shall be unclean to you among the swarming things which swarm on the earth. The weasel, the mouse, the great lizard according to its kind. The gecko, the monitor, the lizard, the sand lizard, the barn owl. These are unclean to you among whom all swarm. Anyone who touches them in their death is unclean until the evening. And if anything on which any one of them falls in their death is unclean, whether any vessels of wood or garment of skin or sack or any vessel in which work is done shall be caused to go into water, it shall be unclean until the evening, then it shall be clean. Can you imagine? So it's not even the thing that's unclean. If they walk on something, if they touch something, it becomes unclean because they're unclean. Any earthen vessel into the midst of which any one of them falls, whatever it shall be will be unclean and you shall break it. Why do you think when you go around Israel, you find millions of pieces of pottery? Do you think that people were really just that reckless? You know, that they didn't know how to carry a pot? Read the scripture. If something that's unclean would touch, and most of the vessels were earthen, if it touches it, you break the vessel. It's that simple. Something that's unclean is unclean. It doesn't become clean. And that's what we got to get in our minds. That there's a clean and there's an unclean. And if we don't get it in our mind, we are not going to make the kingdom of Yahweh. Because we are in such a perverted world, in such a gray world, a world that's meshing over the clean and the unclean. And I'm not talking about animals, because this is not about animals and it's not about food. It's about Yahweh's sanctification. And these are only tools that he uses to teach us something. He could have said anything else, but he doesn't. The point of it is, the unclean touches the clean. You don't only clean it, you break it. It's useless now. It's ended. And all the food which may be eaten, that on which such water falls, shall be unclean. And all drink that may be drunk in any vessel shall be unclean. And anything on which any part of their dead body falls shall be unclean. An oven or a hearth shall be broken down. They are unclean, yes. They are unclean to you. So even an oven, because these were all clay ovens, that one of these things would touch if it's dying and it touches. He doesn't say, clean the oven. He says, break the oven. Get rid of the unclean. This is sanctified to me. This isn't sanctified. Get rid of it. Now we go down. Let's go in verse 42. Anything going on its belly, and any going on all four, and any having many feet, even every swarming thing that swarms on the earth, you shall not eat them, for they are unclean. You shall not pollute yourself with any swarming thing that swarms, nor shall you make yourself unclean with them, so that you should be defiled by them. Right? So now these things are defiling us. Do you ever think about that? If you're out there, you see a little mouse going around, or whatever else. Unclean animal, don't touch it. Because Yahweh says you defile yourself. Stay away from it. For I am Yahweh your Elohim, and you have sanctified yourself, and you have become holy, for I am holy. Each of us made a covenant vow to Yahweh. We made a covenant vow. We went under the water of baptism. We said, I am going to die to the old person, and I am going to put you first in my life, Yahweh. I am going to be your bondservant. And I know I have sins that are worthy of death, but I know that your son came to this earth and suffered, humiliated, mocked, spit upon, beaten, crucified, so that my sins could be forgiven. And I will be your bondservant. I will not compromise in the least. So we realize this is what we say when we're baptized. And it's not something to take lightly, because he says, you have sanctified yourself. That's what set you apart from other people, because most people in the world haven't done that. We're living in an unconverted world. Most of your neighbors, most of your friends, most of the people you work with, some of your unconverted family members, they didn't make this commitment, but you made this commitment. And Yahweh expects you to keep it. He expects you to keep it, and it's serious. You have sanctified yourself, and you have become holy, for I am holy. And you shall not defile your persons with any swarming thing which creeps on the earth. For I am Yahweh who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Now it's going back to the Exodus again. To become your Elohim, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. You shall be kadosh. You shall be set apart. You shall be set apart. We're learning about the early congregation. In a time where they weren't thinking Yeshua was returning, they weren't thinking it's the end of the world, they went up to the mountains to get away from the evilness of commerce. They were afraid that if they stayed in the cities and stayed in society, that they might be tempted in a commerce society. And here we live in commercial Babylon. We live in the most vile, wicked, sick system that has ever been. That's making the rich richer and the poor poorer. It's making our brethren suffer in Africa, our brothers suffer in Asia. That's making people, children, work for 10 cents an hour to make Gucci shirts so that people can live good. And we live in that system and we stay in that system and we compromise and we try to say it's okay. And that's the worst part about it. And then the Shemitah comes, right? Now the Shemitah comes. A year where we can get out of it for a year. The same way that every seventh day we come out of that system. And what do people do that don't have the mindset of Yahweh? They fight it. They argue. They want to blame somebody for it. This is the greatest gift of our life. And maybe, just maybe, our last chance. Maybe our last chance. There's a reason why for 2,000 years they haven't been keeping Shemitahs. And now Yahweh shows us. It's not about fruit. It's not about food. It's about sanctification. I am holy. You be holy. It's serious. The time is up. The time is up. It's either we get serious now or you risk your eternal life. And for some people, maybe they don't care. Maybe they can't care. Maybe they've been so much into the world, it just can't get in your mind anymore. And I know that. I know there's people that will hear this and it will be as if I'm speaking garbled words that they can't understand. But then there's other people of Yahweh that will hear it and say, wow, he's right. I got to hear this message 10 times. It's time to get serious. The kingdom is coming. Yahweh called me for something better than Babylon. I have a commitment I made and I'm not keeping it the way I should be. But you know what? I can do it now. I will do it now. I am going to dedicate this year to Yahweh no matter what. Haggai 2 and verse 11. Haggai 2 and verse 11. So says Yahweh of hosts, now ask the priests the Torah, saying, behold, one bears holy flesh in the wing of his garment, and he touches his wing to the bread, or boiled food, or wine, or oil, any food. Will it become holy? And the priest answered and said, no. Just like we said, if you have something that's sanctified, and you touch something unclean, that unclean doesn't become holy. We just read it in Leviticus 11. And Haggai said, if the unclean of body touches these, is it unclean? And the priest answered and said, it is unclean. So again, if you have something that's sanctified and you touch something that's unclean, the unclean doesn't become sanctified, but the sanctified becomes unclean. And then look what he says. And Haggai answered and said, so is this people, and so is this nation before me, declares Yahweh, and so is every work of their hands, and that which they offer is unclean. And I'm not just talking about Babylon, I'm talking about the world we live in today. Yahweh says it will be like the days of Sodom and Gomorrah, and it will be like the days of Noah, and we are living in it. If we're at the very end, if there's only maybe 10, 15, 20 years left, at what point do you think it's going to become Sodom and Gomorrah? At what point do you think it's going to come like the days of Noah? You think it's only in the last 2 days? Of course not. Of course not. We know it. Yahweh would never leave his people without, like he says, I will not reveal nothing unless I tell my servants the prophets. We know the last generation started in 1948. We know Israel becoming a nation after 2,520 years started it. We know we're 67, 68 years into the last generation, and we know the time is running out. And we know right now is what he's talking about when he says it's like Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, come on, just look out there. Look at the laws. It's homosexuality is legal and actually being said it's a better lifestyle. Are we living in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah? You better believe we are. The days of Noah, there was violence that filled the earth. Who would have ever thought just 2 or 3 years ago you'd see children beheaded? You see these atrocities going on. And people want to deny. It's not yet. It's not yet. Well, I'm here to tell you, oh yeah, it's yet. It's yet, and it's been happening, and we've been blinding ourselves to it, and there's one reason. Because we're not sanctifying our life. Because we're too much like the world, and we're not seeing the difference. It's not that bad out there. The only one that could say that is somebody who hasn't sanctified themselves. Sanctify yourself, and you'll see how bad it is out there. It is bad, it is vile, and like Yahweh says, it's detestable. And now he's given us a blessing. He's forcing us, because you know what? If it wasn't for the Shemitah, we would have never done it. We would have never said, I've got to start now, I have to take this year, and no matter else what, I ain't going to work, I'm not going to do nothing. This is a year I'm dedicating to Yahweh, because I don't have a choice. And if not now, then when? If we're this close to the end, if you can't dedicate a year to Yahweh now, you tell me, when will you? Because if you can't do it now, you'll never do it. You're a hypocrite. Because he's forcing us, he's commanding us to do it now. And if you can't do it now, you'll never do it. This is the time for us to wake up. And this is the time for us to look at ourselves and see where we're falling short. Because every one of us are falling short. I'm not here pointing the finger. Because remember, you point the finger, three more come back at you. I'm looking at my life where I'm falling short. But I know one thing. I got a plan of action. And I know one thing. I will change the Shemitah. I will dedicate this year to Yahweh, and I'm not going to come out of this year the same person I went into, because Yahweh promises me that. And I am going to depend on those promises. I'm going to call him on those promises, because he's got to change me. I can't change myself. The same way he's got to change you. But if you don't surrender, if you don't sanctify yourself, nothing will happen this year, except you're going to miss a lot of foods you like, and you're going to be pretty bitter about it. That's all that will happen if you don't sanctify your life. The Shemitah is not about food, but separation from the world system to Yahweh. If you were having problems keeping the Shemitah so far, it should tell you you are too dependent on the world and your life is not sanctified. It's that simple. When living in a kingdom environment, the Shemitah, like the Sabbath, is a great blessing. We would have all the food we need. We simply wouldn't have the curse of Adam of having to get it with thorns and thistles. If we're living in a kingdom environment, the food would be right out your window. It would be right there. So, if you're having problems keeping it, that's okay. But make you realize, I need to change something here. Because this is supposed to be the greatest blessing of the 7 years. Just like the Sabbath. And if there's problems with keeping it, it's got to tell us changes have to be made in our life. Yahweh would provide from the fruit trees, the gardens, the grain fields that were blessed before the Shemitah and the wild grain during. The problem is we are living in a non-natural environment of commercial Babylon, where the government, where Walmart, right, and ourself are our providers and not Yahweh. In a world system of Satan, where it's almost impossible to keep the Shemitah and trust in Yahweh. And this is really what it's at. This gulf is coming. It's a straight down line, and you got to get on one side or the other. Who is your provider? Is it Babylon? Is it a government check? Is it the weekly paycheck? Is it the 401k? Because they're all going to go. Maybe not this year, but they're going. The whole monetary system will collapse. I can guarantee you that 100%. It could be as soon as a few months or a few years. Nobody knows. But it will collapse. It's a debt-based system. Every debt-based system has to collapse because it's built on nothing. So who's your provider? Are you going to trust in Yahweh to provide the manna every day in the wilderness? Or are you going to trusting in Babylon? It's one or the other. And that's what I'm saying. This is a year of release. It's a year of release. You can release those things that you haven't been keeping. Psalm 126, 5 and 6. Psalm 126 says, "Those who sow in tears shall reap with joyful shouting. Surely he who walks and weeps, bearing a trail of seed, shall come again with joyful shouting, bearing his sheaves." Remember, bringing in the sheaves, the song, right? "Those who sow in tears will reap with joyful shouting." Why does the Bible say that? Why is somebody sowing in tears? Because when you sow your field, it's a lot of work. You have to go out and you have to plow. You have to turn all your dirt over. You have to sow the seed. And then you have to pray for rain. Right? Right after Sukkot. That's why the last day of Sukkot, why are they praying for rain? Because if you do all that work and no rain comes, the seed is going to be eaten by the birds. It's going to be eaten by the animals. And you'll wind up with nothing. You might do all the work and get zero. "He who sows, those who sow in tears shall reap with joyful shouting." But when you're sowing, when it's harvest time and you're getting everything, that's where you're happy. Because you see the fruit of your labor was blessed. And in the Shemitah, Yahweh says you don't have to sow in tears. All you have to do is reap with joy. I'll do the sowing. I'll do the planting. I'll do the fertilizing. I'll do the pruning. All you have to do is believe me. Just believe me. And that's the problem. We're not believing him for these promises. We're trusting in these other things of Babylon. We're trusting in the system. And it's a year we've got to start getting away from that. It doesn't all happen at once. Don't want to scare people. But you have to get on the road. There's 7 stops in the wilderness. If you don't take that first stop, you'll never get to the second stop. And time is running out. I can assure you that. Time is running out. Genesis 3. Let's go back to Genesis now. And let's start putting this together. Genesis 3. "And the serpent was cunning above every beast of the field which Yahweh Elohim had made. And he said to the woman, 'Is it so that Elohim has said, you shall not eat from every tree of the garden?' And the woman said to the serpent, 'Of the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of the tree in the middle of the garden, Elohim has said, you shall not eat of it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die.'" Very simple, right? The kingdom of Yahweh is not about food and drink, but it is about obedience and faith. Yahweh said something, and they didn't believe in it. Yahweh said, "In the day you eat that fruit, you will die." And they believed the serpent. No, they won't die. You know? They believe the serpent. It's impossible to please Yahweh without faith. We must believe in his promises. And part of those promises are the Shemitah year. "For Elohim knows in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be open and you will be as Elohim, knowing good and evil. And the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree was desirable to make one wise. And she took of the fruit and ate, and she gave to her husband, and he ate again out of judicial order." Like we said before in the Torah study, where's Jacob there? In Genesis 34, where is he there when his daughter's going out, uncovered, you know, to the people of the land? Where is Adam here? Where is the priest of the family? Nowhere to be found, right? The woman is taking the fruit, and she's giving it to him, and he's eating. "And both their eyes were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves on the tree and made girdles for themselves. And they heard the sound of Yahweh Elohim walking up and down in the garden at the breeze of the day. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the face of Yahweh Elohim in the middle of the trees of the garden." They lost their sanctification by treason. It was a treasonous act what they did, because they didn't totally trust in Yahweh 100%. And when we have the same mindset, it's also treason. When we have the same mindset, that how are we going to eat? What are we going to do? How are we going to survive? It's treason. Because Yahweh tells us how we'll survive. He tells us how we're going to eat. All we have to do is believe it. We have to believe it. Sanctification was lost by a lack of faith in trusting Yahweh. They went their own way. They didn't trust Yahweh. Drop down to verse 17. Now here comes the punishment for the man. "He said to the man, 'Because you listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, the ground will be cursed because of you. You shall eat of it in sorrow all the days of your life, and it will bring forth thorns and thistles for you. And you shall eat the plant of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread until you return to the ground, for you have been taken out of it. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So here it is. Yahweh gives a curse, right? Number one, he tells us, as mankind, where should our food come from? Our food should come from the earth, from the trees, from our gardens, not from Walmart. I don't see any Walmart in any translation here. That you're going to eat your food from Walmart and have abundance. Doesn't say it. Yahweh provides, but you are going to have to work for it. But he says, you know what? Every seventh year, I'm going to give you a picture how it will be in the millennium. Every seventh year, you don't have to work at all. You don't have to plant. You don't have to harvest. You don't have to prune. I will do it for you. Because I want you to focus on me that whole year so you can understand what sanctification is. And you can understand what it'll be like when I return. But now, how has Satan deceived the world? He's deceived the world by getting people away from it. You ask the average person, where does food come from? What do they say? The supermarket. There are no supermarkets in Scripture. People don't know how to grow food anymore. They don't understand anything about agriculture. They don't understand, like when we were at the biblical park, that everything, planting, sowing, trees, plants, all are connected to Yahweh's covenant promises. And they understand none of it because of commercial Babylon. And now Yahweh says, after 2,000 years, I'm here to release you from Babylon. I'm here to release you. And what are the people going to say? And I'm not just talking about America. America brought the system. I'm talking about everywhere in the world. This is the first year of release in 2,000 years that we understand correctly. Will you be released? Or do you want to stay? Like I say, many people, they love the punishment more than the reward. Are you ready to leave the comfort zone of Babylon and come into the kingdom of Yahweh? Because like I said, although it's a reality, it's also a mentality. It's a mindset before anything else. The ground was cursed for sin and rebellion. Every seventh day we come out of the world, we sanctify ourselves, we enter Yahweh's rest. And now he's saying you can enter my rest not for 24 hours, but for 365 days and actually more. Because it's an intercalatory year. We have 13 months. So he even gives us an extra blessing this year. That it's not a 12-month Shemitah, it's a 13-month Shemitah. So we even get an extra month coming out of it. And he says he will provide like the manna in the wilderness. Leviticus 25 and verse 18. And you shall do my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments, and you shall do them. And you shall live on the land securely. You shall do my statutes, and keep my judgments, and shall do them, and live on the land securely. Obedience. This is what he's talking about. Obedience and faith. And what happens when you do? And the land shall give its fruit, and you shall eat to satisfaction. And you shall dwell securely on it. And when you say, what shall we eat in the seventh year? For lo, we may not sow or gather our increase. Then I have commanded my blessing on you in the sixth year. And it shall produce the increase for 3 years. And you shall sow the eighth year. And you shall eat of the old crop until the ninth year. And to the coming of its crop, you shall eat of the old. Shame on anybody that says, what shall we eat in the seventh year? Shame on anybody. All you're doing is saying you don't trust in Yahweh. Look at the story what happened. Remember when there was the great famine that was in Israel? And what happened with Elisha? That Yahweh sent by Elisha and said, by tomorrow, you know, that this will be how much wheat will cost and the poop of the dung of the pigeon will cost this much. And what did the man at the gate say? Oh, that's impossible. He made a comment about it. And Elisha said, okay, you're going to see it, but you're not going to eat it. And the man got trampled on when they were coming for the food and died because he didn't believe. It is the most horrid, treacherous thing in the world for us not to believe Yahweh. The most horrid, treacherous thing in the world that we don't believe Yahweh. Because he tells us right here. We don't have to ask how will we survive. He tells us. Psalm 23, a psalm of David. Yahweh is my shepherd. I shall not lack. Yahweh is my shepherd. I shall not lack. Is he your shepherd or isn't he? Don't be a hypocrite. Don't say he's your shepherd and then come and tell us what you're lacking. Tell us what you don't have. Tell us what you wish for. Remember the Israelites when they left Egypt? Oh, we had the leeks and we had the onions in Egypt. Shame on them. And not one of them, except for Caleb and Joshua, over 20 years old, entered his rest. His rest is more than just a physical place. His rest is the peace of mind that surpasses all understanding. His rest takes us away from the torture that commercial Babylon brings to our mind. It's a torture system. It doesn't help anyone, even the people in Babylon. They may think they're being blessed by the money and the riches and the cars, but it's all based on a debt system. None of it belongs to anybody. And the system is getting ready to crash. And instead of the people being happy, they're worried. The best thing in the world that could happen to Babylon is for that system to crash. And now you can start the wilderness. Because you're not going to go into the wilderness with the riches of Babylon. It's that simple. It doesn't work that way. If we want to go to the wilderness, you've got to leave Babylon behind. And this is why Yahweh's given us the Shemitah. He's blessing us. He's saying, I'm not going to force it on you in a day. Right? Like it says, Yahweh will never give us a trial more than what we can bear. Although at times it seems, you're right at that boiling point. But he doesn't. So now he's saying, no, I'll give you a year. I'll be gentle with you. I'll transition you into this. But like all the other time, I've been preaching this message for 20 years. Some have listened, some haven't. But we're at the end of the rope now. And the time is running out. And either we're going to follow the mandate that Yahweh is doing in his congregation, or you risk being left behind. Yahweh is my shepherd, I shall not want. If we lack anything, he's not our shepherd. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me to the waters of rest. He restores my soul. He guides me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Do you have green pastures? Are your pastures green? Is your cup overflowing? Do you see your cup half full or half empty? If Yahweh is your shepherd, then there's nothing you should want. Everything you have should be perfect. I say that. There's been times I've been blessed. I'm coming home from a mission trip. I have a delay for 24 hours, and they put me up in a 5-star Hyatt hotel that's $400 or $500. Don't pay a penny. Get food. And there's been times I'm sleeping on straw in Kenya. And you want to know something? I actually like sleeping on the straw in Kenya better because I have fellowship there. Not that I'm not happy for the $500 Hyatt and the nice meal that came with it, but if I had the choice, I'd sleep on the straw in Kenya. Because, little with the blessing of Yahweh than abundance without it. But this is what it's about. Yahweh is my shepherd, I shall not lack. It doesn't matter. You wake up every day and how great it is that you have no idea what's in store for you. You say the daily prayer, Romans 12. Yahweh, I'm a living sacrifice for you today. You walk out of your house and you have no idea. You have no idea who you might meet, what might happen. The world is yours. And Yahweh to bless you with it if you have eyes to see and ears to hear. But if Yahweh's not your shepherd and you're lacking things, then your whole focus is going to be on what you don't have instead of what you have. You're one out of 30 million people. And if that's not enough to turn your heart to Yahweh, I don't know what will. That out of 30 million people, he chose you. And Yahweh don't make mistakes. But he didn't choose you to sit in a chair and worry about what you don't have. He picked you to sanctify you, to set you apart, to glorify him through bearing fruit in your life. That's the reason for it. And the one who does, remember, the one who took that talent and hid it in a napkin, we know what happens. They lose what they have. The world is fading away. 1 John 2:15. Love not the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loved the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Because all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in its lust, but the one doing the will of Yahweh abides forever. The world is passing. Like I said, we're at almost the end of the 6,000 years. We're in 5,900 and... fill in the blank. 75, 82, 87, whatever it is, we're right toward that end of this. Don't love the world, the things in the world, because Yahweh is not in this world. How much do you love the world? Internet, social media, it's all from Satan. Like we said, CERN was the one who started the internet. CERN, the demonic company, That is planning on trying to open up the porthole of demons coming out. The internet is not something of Yahweh. Social media is not of Yahweh. Is Yahweh providing to you the Shemitah? Or like I said, is it a government check? Is it a 401k? Is it a weekly paycheck? Is it a credit card? Who is your provider? That's the problem with Babylon. that Babylon hooks the people. You know, since President Obama has gotten in office, and it's not only President Obama, because during President Bush, the food stamps, people on food stamps doubled, but during President Obama, it's quadrupled. And there's like 60 million Americans almost on food stamps. Can you imagine? But that's what they want. They're happy. They want you to be relying on them and not Yahweh. They don't want you homeschooling your children. Why? Because they're going to indoctrinate your children and you're going to lose them. It's that simple. It's not the government's responsibility to raise your children. It's your responsibility. It's the year of release. It's the year of leaving Babylon behind. It's the year of leaving Satan and his wiles behind. It's the year of overcoming. First, Shemitah, like we said, in almost 2,000 years, it's a wake-up call that our lives are not sanctified enough in trusting Yahweh. We are not sanctified enough. And as we'll see, without sanctification, without holiness, you will not enter the kingdom of Yahweh. Praise Him that He gave us the Shemitah. Praise Him for that. Hebrews 4, in verse 3. Hebrews 4 and verse 3. He says, "For we who have believed will enter into the rest, even as he said, 'As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest.' For behold, the works of Elohim were from the very foundation of the world." So here it is, he's going to the beginning over here. He's going back to creation, and he's swearing in his wrath that they will not enter his rest. Why? Because they didn't believe. "For he has spoken concerning the Sabbath, and Elohim rested from all his works on the seventh day." And that's why we pray every seventh day to enter his rest, that he allows us to our minds to leave Babylon for 24 hours and enter his millennial rest for 24 hours. "And here again he said, 'They shall not enter into my rest.' There was a chance for some to enter, but they to whom the good news was first preached did not enter on account of disobedience. He again marks out a certain day, saying in David, 'Today, after so long a time, according as he said, today if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua the son of Nun had given them rest, then would he have afterwards spoken of another day?' Of course not. There's one seventh day. It is therefore the duty of the people of Elohim to keep the Sabbath. For he who entered into his rest has also ceased from his own work, as Elohim did from his." Do you want to enter his rest during this Shemitah? Then cease from your own work. Cease from your physical work and cease from your worldly stuff. Your pride, your anger, whatever it is. Whatever it is you want to release in this year of release, release it. But let's stop ceasing from our work and enter his work. "Therefore, let us strive to enter that rest, that not anyone fall in the example of disobedience." Right? Obedience and faith, they go hand in hand. "For the word of Yahweh is living and powerfully working and sharper than every two-edged sword, and piercing as far as the division of both soul and spirit, of both joints and marrow and bones, and able to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart." And I pray over here, and I pray for everyone listening to this, that this very scripture is happening. Because it's happening to me. I feel that sword going into my heart and cutting me and telling me where I need to change. That's what Yahweh is doing. We must believe to enter Yahweh's rest. The Shemitah is a sabbatical year. And like I said, it's a year of separation. Most people dedicate, during biblical times, the whole year to Yahweh because it's a sabbatical year. Luke 17. Luke 17. And the problem is a mindset. The problem is, you know, I asked you in your class in the very beginning, are you a master or are you a slave? You remember that. One of our first classes on becoming the complete believer. Are you a master or are you a slave? Because we all will say we're slaves, but we live like masters. It's a contradiction. Like I said, for a young woman to say, no, I am going to be a virgin until I get married, and then she dresses half naked, it's a contradiction. It's a contradiction in your life. You can't have a contradiction. The physical can't contradict the spiritual. They have to complement each other. You can't say you're an ambassador of Yahweh and not act like an ambassador of Yahweh. Like we said, an ambassador of Yahweh, always in state. How we speak, how we dress, what we do. We don't want the physical to destroy the spiritual. So when we're over here, And we're saying, are you a master or are you a slave? Let's look at Luke 17, verse 5. And the apostles said to our master, give us more faith. Give us more faith. That's what we need. We need faith, right? And like we said, how does faith come? By hearing and hearing the word of Yahweh. By reading it over and over and over. By when it comes up, by enacting on it. The more you do it, the more faith you'll build. And he said to them, if you had faith as a grain of mustard, you would say to the sycamore tree, be rooted up and planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Now you all know the sycamore tree, right? See the fruit. But which of you, having a servant plowing or tending a flock, will immediately say to him, coming out of the field, come recline? But will he not say to him, prepare something that I may eat? And having girding himself, serve me until I eat and drink, and after these things you eat and drink. What does he receive, that servant, because he did the things he was commanded? I don't think so. Likewise, even you, when you have done all things that are commanded, you say that we are idle servants because we've only done what we ought to. And here we are, we're not even doing what's commanded. We got a long way to go in sanctification. We are not sanctifying our life. But like he said, if you're a servant, you're out working in the field all day and you come in, the master doesn't say, oh, you worked hard, sit down and eat. He says, you make my dinner and then you eat. Are we masters or are we slaves? How on earth can we say we're the slave of Yahweh and Yeshua? And now the Shemitah comes, right? Comes every seventh year, but it hasn't been being kept. I haven't talked to one person worldwide that has ever kept the Shemitah correctly like we're doing this year. And then we're still going to say, nope, I'm still going to work my job. I'm still going to go out. Who's your master and who's the slave? Who is your master? You better ask yourself. What if this is the last Shemitah? What if there's only one more, but the next Shemitah, the beast power is here and we're in captivity? Who is your master? Who is the slave? If you can't dedicate this year, that is the most important Shemitah since the Garden of Eden, then what Shemitah can you commit? It's that simple. It's time to stop making excuses because the gulf is widening. And you got to choose now, this year, what side of that gulf you're going to be on. It's that simple. Because next year, you might not be able to get from one end of the gulf to the other end of the gulf. Are you a master or a slave? You're 1 in 30 million. Yahweh handpicked you. What does that mean? And if it doesn't mean anything, if you can't even as a slave do what you're commanded to do, then how on earth is Yahweh ever going to give you eternal life in his kingdom? Tabernacle of David, 3,000 years is covered. Yahweh reveals it. Like I said, not 50 years ago, not 50 years from now. He revealed it today. And where does he talk about the Tabernacle of David? To the Philadelphian. And to the Philadelphians that understand, that's our sign. Yahweh hasn't made it public. It's not all over the internet. They're not charging people money to get in there. Somebody at the feast came up to me. They said they'd give me $1,000 to take them in there. I said, you can give me $1,000,000. There ain't no way I'd ever take you in there. I wouldn't do it because it's not for commercialism. It's a sign to the people of Yahweh because he clearly says when the tabernacle of David is rebuilt and Mount Zion is uncovered, the Messiah will appear. So like I said, if we're going to put this Shemitah off, you know, nope, I still got to work, still got to do this. I'll do it the next Shemitah. Don't be so sure. This may be our last chance. As far as turning our minds. I'm not saying there's not going to be another Shemitah. But I wonder, the people that are not going to keep the Shemitah, where, if even in the congregation, they'll be. And I said that at the feast. I didn't plan on saying it. It wasn't in my notes. That this is going to be a dividing point in the congregation. But I believe it. I believe many are going to fall away this year. Because you can only quench the Spirit of Yahweh so long before it's not there anymore. And then Yahweh will always allow you to repent, but you know what will happen? You just won't want to do it. We've already had it. We've had people leave us. Even some in leadership. And it's not if they repented, we wouldn't take them back. They won't repent because they don't see where they're wrong. They get so defiled in their mind that they can't see it. And that's why, like I said, it's a year of release. This is a year that Yahweh is saying, whatever is in your life you want to get rid of, release it. Give it to me. Give it to me. Is there a sickness? Is there a spirit of anger? Is there fear? Is there doubt? Whatever it is, give it to me. It's the year of release. Let it go. I'll take it from you. But we gotta believe, and we have to be obedient. And like I said, the one thing it's showing me is the Shemitah, what a blessing it is by Yahweh, because we're not ready. I know we're not ready yet. I know we're not ready, but I do believe we will be much more ready after this year than we are now. Because it's the year of release. It's the year that Yahweh is doing this, and he's moving in a certain direction. We just have to believe it. Exodus 21. He says, and these are the judgments which you shall put before them. When you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh year, the year of release, he will go out for nothing. If he comes in with his body, he will go out with his body. If he's the husband of a wife, his wife shall go out with him. If his master gives him a wife, and she bears sons and daughters to him, the wife and the children shall belong to her master, and he will go out with his body. And if the slave truly says, I love my master and my wife and my children, I do not desire to go out for free, his master shall bring him to Elohim, and one shall bring him to the door and to the doorpost and to his master. He shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. So here's the year of release. Are you a master or are you a slave? Yahweh's calling. He's saying he's ready to pierce your ear forever. Are you going to unconditionally, for eternity now, serve him? Or do you have to one more time serve somebody else? Serve another master, serve yourself, do whatever. Or are you ready to unconditionally serve him? But just by the way, you know, if you've been around for a while, and you came in the congregation and Yahweh blessed you with a wife and children and other things, if you're not ready to serve Yahweh, and you're ready to go on the other side of that gulf, you're going by yourself. You're not taking your wife, you're not taking your kids, you're not taking other brethren, you're going to go on your own. Because Yahweh will protect with his. We said this. When he says, I am a jealous Elohim, it's not jealousy like envy. It means that he knows what's his, and he will protect it. Do we trust him for that? Each one of us are his. I know my sheep. My sheep will never follow another voice. When I see people coming up to me with all these other false websites, I know they ain't Yeshua sheep. Because he says they never could follow another voice. All you have to do is believe the scripture, and everything becomes very, very easy at that point. And here we are, he's giving us a whole year to grow in that. We have to decide who we serve. Do you want to be the bondservant of Yahweh forever or Babylon? Right? Babylon's getting ready to burn, but if you want to be the bondservant of Babylon, that's your free choice Yahweh gives you. Or do you want to jump over that gulf and come into the kingdom of Yahweh? Because like I said, it's a mentality. It's a mindset. You got to live in it every single day. Deuteronomy 15. Deuteronomy 15. At the end of 7 years, you shall make a release. And this is the matter of the release. Everyone who has a loan to his neighbor shall release it. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because a release has been proclaimed for Yahweh. You may exact it from a foreigner, but your hand shall release whatever is yours with your brother. Only that there shall not be one in need among you. For Yahweh will greatly bless you in the land that Yahweh Elohim has given to you for an inheritance to possess it. Only if you carefully you will listen to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, to take heed to do all his commandments, which I am commanding you today. For Yahweh your Elohim will bless you as he promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And I think I'll stop there. It's the year of release. Babylon is the greatest debtor nation ever on the face of the world. Just since the time that President Obama has been in there. They went from $8 trillion debt, which they said during President Bush, how it was unbelievable, unsustainable, and he more than doubled it. It can't sustain itself. It's ready to fall. It's the year of release. And either you're going to clamp on to that system and hold on to the coattails and go down with it, or you're going to let it go and come into the kingdom of Yahweh. It's one or the other. And like I said, it is really hard to do it as Babylon is burning to change your mindset like that. It doesn't work that way. You have to start doing it now. It's a process. It's a process of changing your mindset. It's a process of breaking those bad anchors. It's a process. And too many have been waiting even till now. For the ones that have been working on this process, it's not so bad. This is just another part of the process. And we're loving it. And we're learning from it. And we're growing from it. For the ones that are fighting and fighting and fighting, now it's almost to the point that this is the breaking point. The Shemitah is even impossible in some people's eyes. Because they haven't been working on it. They haven't been releasing to Yahweh. They haven't been entering His rest. They've been trusting in Babylon and not trusting in Messiah. Genesis 1:26. And Elohim said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let him have rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the heaven, and over the cattle, and over the earth, and over all the creepers of the earth." Like we said, Yahweh gave man dominion. He gave him rulership. He didn't give him ownership. He gave him rulership. He didn't give him ownership. But yet, we have a mindset of owners. We have a mindset of possessors. And we have to get rid of that mindset. 1 Corinthians 7. Paul tells us about in the end time, he says, "But I say, brother," 1 Corinthians 7:29, "that the time has been cut short. Let the ones who have wives be as though they have none. And those weeping is not weeping. And those rejoicing is not rejoicing. And those buying as if they did not possess anything. And those who make use of this world is not abusing it. For the moment this world is passing away." So again, if Yahweh blessed you with physical things, you don't have to feel guilty about it. It's Yahweh's blessing. Never feel guilty about Yahweh's blessing, but use it for the kingdom of Yahweh. And like he says, whatever you have, realize it's Yahweh's. Psalm 24, "The earth is Yahweh's, the fullness thereof, the people, those who dwell in it." So everything belongs to Yahweh, including the people. So whatever is in your hand, use it for the kingdom of Yahweh. If I have a van in my hand, I'm going to use it to drive widows somewhere. If I have money, I'm going to produce Bibles. If I have a skill for computers, I'm going to help with computers to further the good news. We are to use without abusing, as the mode of this world is passing away. And this is what the Shemitah is about. It's about transitioning from the system of Babylon to the kingdom of Yahweh. Very little about food. You know, so what? So I eat more fish this year instead of vegetables. So be it. Kingdom of Yahweh is not meat and drink. Very little about food. It's about obedience, and it's about faith, and it's about surrender and trust. That's what it's all about. The Garden of Eden, the Sabbath, the Shemitah. All about the same thing. And what a blessing is at the end of the road if we follow. A year of release, like I said, releasing pride, sickness, fear, doubt, rebellion, anger, whatever it is, releasing it. And you know what? 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Do not be led astray. Bad companionships ruin good habits." It's about a year of maybe releasing some companionships, right? It's a year of release. It's a year of release. It's about separating from worldly, non-committed people. Because they'll only frustrate you and take you down. It's a year of separating from worldly, non-committal people. It's a year of release of anything in your life that is not sanctified to Yahweh. It's that simple. Anything that's not sanctified to Yahweh, release it. And He'll take it. Or there are things you've been working on for years you couldn't overcome. Now you can overcome it. All you have to do is believe Yahweh. Just trust in Him with all your heart. And He will follow through. Luke 16, in verse 24. This is talking about the parable of Lazarus and the rich man. Luke 16:24 says, "And calling, He said, 'Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Eleazar that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and moisten his tongue. For I am tormented in this flame.'" So I'm not going to go through the whole story, but what happens? It's a parable, Lazarus and the rich man, right? The rich man has all these good things in life. Lazarus is taking the crumbs from the floor. And then what happens? They die. You're sleeping in the grave for who knows how long. But now the resurrection happens. And the resurrection happens, and here's Lazarus having the same promises. The bosom of Abraham literally means he has the same promises of Abraham. And he's in the kingdom. But the rich man that never made those sacrifices, that had one foot in and one foot out, he's not there. He's on the other side, and now he doesn't know it's the kingdom, and he's asking Abraham, you know, for this. And look what he says.
But Abraham said, verse 25, "My son, remember how you fully received your good things in your lifetime, and Eliezer likewise the bad things. But now he is comforted and you are tormented. And beside all these things, a great chasm, a great gulf, has been fixed between us and you, so that those desiring to pass from here are not able to, nor can they pass from there to us. For too long, people have been one foot in, one foot out. That gulf is separating. And I'm telling you, the Shemitah is the dividing point. If you don't get your act together now, you risk losing your eternal life. Because that gulf, by the end of this year, may be so wide, you can't jump anymore from side to side. And this should scare us when we see this. The time to make the commitment is now. The time to make the... Yahweh's given us every sign we needed. He's given us every... His Spirit, He's given us everything. There's no reason for us to wait even 1 hour longer than to give Him the full dedication in our life. It's not about food. It's about sanctification. It's about sanctification. And through His Spirit, there's a power that He's putting on His congregation this year that we can overcome. We can do these things. Hebrews 12. Be ending shortly, another 5-10 minutes. Hebrews 12, in verse 5. "And you have forgotten the exhortation which He speaks with you as with sons. My sons, do not despise the chastising of Yahweh, nor faint while being corrected by Him. For whom Yahweh loves, He chastises and disciplines every son whom He is pleased. If you endure discipline, Yahweh is dealing with you as with sons. For who is the son who a father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become sharers, then you are strangers and not sons or children. Furthermore, we indeed had fathers of our flesh as correctors, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live?" So if you're going through, I said, this is going to be a year of trials. A year of building up, a year of tearing down. Don't be upset, though. If you're going through trials, that's a good thing. The trials are there to purify us. They're not there to punish us. So the struggles we're going to go through this year as we're leaving commercial Babylon and coming into the kingdom of Yahweh, there will be trials, there will be struggles, but all of it will work for the good of those who love Yahweh and those who are called according to purpose. "For they truly disciplined us for a few days according to the things seeming good to them, but He, Yahweh, for our profit, in order for us to partake in His holiness," right? His sanctification, His setting apart. It's not about food. It's about entering the sanctification of Yahweh, entering His rest. "And all discipline for the present indeed does not seem to be joyous, but grievance. But afterwards it gives back peaceable fruit of righteousness to the ones having been exercised." Me and Petra were just talking about it. When we left America and went to Babylon and went to Central America, it was a crash course in learning. What we learned in 7 months could have taken us 10 years to learn. Am I happy I went through it? Absolutely. Would I want to do it again? No way. No way. So that's the thing. Trials at the time, they're not good, but afterwards they bear fruit to your soul. So it doesn't, at the present time, it doesn't seem joyful, but afterwards it gives back peaceable fruit. "Because of this, straighten the hands hanging alongside and the enfeebled knees, and make straight tracks for your feet, that the member which is lame may not suffer, but rather be healed. Eagerly pursue peace and holiness with all, without which no one will see Yahweh." Eagerly pursue peace and holiness with all, without nobody will see Yahweh. Sanctification, holiness, kadosh. It's the time to separate ourselves. Like I said, you got a spirit of anger, it's the time to rejoice.